With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Sabrina Halvorsen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning on the AgNet News Hour. Coming up later, climate smart agriculture practices that are supporting dairy innovations. But first, our top story today. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack on Thursday announced the next steps in the U.S. Department of Agriculture's efforts to bolster U.S. agricultural trade, including the department's planned trade missions for 2024 and the opening of a public comment period for new regional agricultural promotion programs.
As I've often said, the key to trade is people, presence, and promotions. And these resources will allow us to continue to expand our reach into markets that are non-traditional to complement the work that we're doing in the more traditional ag markets.
Vilsack said market diversification is an important tool for maximizing growth opportunities for U.S. agriculture, as well as hedging the risk of market contraction and general volatility in the global marketplace.
In March, we're looking forward to a trade mission to South Korea. In April, the trade mission will be headed to India. In June, the trade mission will be in Canada. July will see us traveling to Colombia. September, we'll do an event in Vietnam, a trade mission in Vietnam, which will also have some Thailand opportunities and influences. And December, we'll finish with a trip to Morocco, which will also allow us to have some Northern African nations involved. And so you can see from the trade promotion and trade mission area that we're looking for diversifying our market opportunities.
In October, Secretary Vilsack announced that USDA will use $1.3 billion from the Commodity Credit Corporation funds to establish RAP to bolster and diversify U.S. agricultural export opportunities and strengthen support for specialty crop industries. The investment will enable American exporters to enter new markets and expand market share in current and growing markets. Two top U.S. ag trade officials shared some of these successes in 2023 during a visit with farm broadcasters. Rod Bain has more.
A Wednesday talk about agricultural trade between farm broadcasters and two top U.S. ag trade officials.
Over the past few years, we have seen amazing export numbers for U.S. agriculture. And while challenges and headwinds facing exports do exist, USTR is being proactive about building upon existing and creating new trading relationships across the globe.
While the United States has long been a global leader in food and agricultural exports, as new potential markets emerge, we need to be able to take advantage of those opportunities and bring more U.S. products to all parts of the world.
U.S. Trade Representative's Office Chief Ag Negotiator Doug McCaleb pointed out ag trade wins for our nation in Southeast Asian markets this year, while Agriculture Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Alexis Taylor covered other farm and food trade gains for the U.S. across the globe in 2023. From the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Biosecurity continues to be an important topic for the U.S. pork industry. Dr. Megan Niederwerder, Associate Director of the Swine Health Information Center, says African swine fever is top of mind, but the concerns don't stop there.
When we think about biosecurity practices that we can develop or that we can learn from, really biosecurity applies across foreign animal diseases as well as endemic swine diseases. So when we think about the most costly swine diseases of U.S. pork producers, we have to talk about PRRS. But then when we think about the 800-pound gorilla in the room and the prevention efforts of African swine fever, we really need biosecurity protocols, technologies that are cost-effective, provide that value back to producers, and it help both the endemic disease side as well as the foreign animal disease side.
Niederwerder says pork producers can learn a lot from poultry producers battling against avian influenza.
We certainly have risks to our pork producers and our pigs with regards to feral swine and the diseases that they can carry. So thinking about the biosecurity on your farm and also backyard farms, thinking about how do we reduce the risk of exposure to wildlife. We can also learn from avian influenza, thinking about things like depopulation and disposal, thinking about how do we prepare for those types of events should a foreign animal disease enter. Thinking about all of those things and, of course, the lessons learned just helps us advance our knowledge and help pork producers based on what's happened in the avian influenza space. It's just more lessons to be learned.
It's especially vital to have biosecurity plans in place if a neighboring farm has a disease outbreak.
We have to think about not only biosecurity or bioexclusion, that's the prevention of disease entry into our farm, but we have to think about biocontainment as well, which means if we get an outbreak, how do we protect our neighbors? How do we prevent the pathogen from spreading from our site to the surrounding sites? And that may be owned by the same producers, it may be owned by other producers, but certainly in the cases of disease, the more that we can contain the pathogen to a single site or a single system, the better off we are as a whole production industry because we've protected the spread and we've minimized the impact.
Don't forget, if you have missed any of our morning shows or just need to get the news at a different time, you can subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet NewsHour on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet NewsHour, and it is available on both Apple and Android devices. This is the AgNet NewsHour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will return in just a moment. You are listening to the AgNet NewsHour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. In today's National Spotlight, taking a look at Midwest planting, here's Rusty Halverson.
Farm Futures recently released its 2024 Planting Outlook Survey results. Looking ahead to next year, farmers seem to be cautiously optimistic despite challenges, according to Jackie Holland of Farm Futures.
The kind of old rule of thumb is that as inflation goes, ag commodities are usually an early predictor of where inflation will shake out. We've seen a lot of those inflationary pressures ease over the past year. And as we as farmers know, you know, your revenues are always going to fall before your costs do. So I think there is a lot more hesitancy this year to really forecast out future profits just because farmers are looking at an environment where revenues might be a little lower, but the costs are still high. So squeezed a little bit on both ends of the pocketbook is really where a lot of that sentiment stems from.
Farmers in the survey appear to be keeping similar marketing strategies going into next year, and Holland says that's a little bit surprising.
As I just talked about, kind of the changing market conditions that we're running into, especially if we see a big corn crop this fall, farmers don't seem super worried about that right now. You know, they all have benefited from really good harvest prices over the last few years, and they're still seeing some strong cash prices headed into harvest. So I don't think there was a lot of incentive for them to change what they're doing differently. So if we end up seeing even further corn yield downgrades, then yeah, that's probably going to work out really well for these farmers.
Holland says the acreage battle between corn and soybeans might not be as intense next spring.
Our farmers indicated that maybe it's not going to be quite as contentious of a battle as we've tried to forecast in previous years. Our farmers indicated they were looking to plant 93.1 million acres of corn and 85.4 million acres of soybeans. For those of you keeping track with USDA's latest acreage estimate, that's about a 1% decrease from 2023 corn acres, but a 2% increase from the soybean acreage that was planted this year.
There are a few factors that could cause some acreage shuffling next year.
I think the big driver here really comes down to looking at the fertilizer side. Fertilizer prices have come down, but they're still high relative to historical levels. And there is a little bit more of a risk that we're going to see phosphate and potassium prices remain high headed into next year. So it kind of limits outside market incentives that would be pulling acres one way or the other.
That's Jackie Holland of Farm Futures.
That's today's National Spotlight. Now here's Randall Wiseman with today's livestock report.
Well, in today's livestock news, sustainability in agriculture is a topic we continue to hear more and more about, and it's one that the cattle industry has been discussing for years. Mary Thomas Hart, chief counsel with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, looks at how the cattle industry continues to be sustainable.
Every year, New York City hosts Climate Week in conjunction with the United Nations General Assembly when they have some of the world's most important leaders in town, right? They have this huge gathering of global policymakers, and the city really uses that opportunity to bring in a pretty broad swath of stakeholders to talk about what they're doing in their industries to improve their environment. environmental footprint, and farm and ranch groups from across the country participating. And I think it gives us a really exciting opportunity to talk about all of the good practices that we're implementing, because, you know, consumers in New York City, consumers in urban centers around the world really don't get the opportunity to see the good stuff that we do on farms and ranches across the United States. So I think that New York Climate Week gives us a really exciting opportunity to talk about the good work that happens in the U.S. beef supply chain to consumers from around the world.
And she also explains how sustainability in the cattle industry is actually measured.
So when we think about sustainability in the U.S. beef industry, I think it's important to consider sustainability as a three-legged stool, right? So you have three parts: environmental sustainability, economic sustainability, and social sustainability. Back in 2021, NCBA set four sustainability goals that address all three pillars of the sustainability stool. The first is to demonstrate the climate neutrality of U.S. cattle production by 2040. The second is to increase opportunities for producer profitability. And the third is related to ecosystem services and the social value that cattle ranches provide in rural communities. And the fourth is related to workforce development and worker safety. So through those four goals, we hope to not only maintain the high standard that we have in the U.S. beef industry, but to, you know, urge continuous improvement within our industry.
Again, that was Mary Thomas Hart with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Of course, NCBA notes that thanks to generations of continuous improvements, the cattle industry has substantially reduced greenhouse gas emissions while more efficiently providing a nutritious protein. To learn more, go to their website, ncba.org. And a quick reminder, the 107th Annual California Cattlemen's and Cattlewomen's Convention is just around the corner. It runs November 29th through December 1st at the Nugget Casino in Reno, Nevada. Confirmed speakers for this year's event include Patrick Linnell with Cattle Facts, Michelle Miller, the Farm Babe, and Emily Ellis with the Animal Ag Alliance. Full registration is underway. For a schedule and to learn more about registering, go to the California Cattlemen's website, calcattlemen.org. That's calcattlemen.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
This is the AgNet News Hour. We will return in just a moment with more agriculture news and farm features. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Now we have more of the day's agriculture news with today's AgNet West headlines. Here's Brian German.
California pistachios could be looking at another record year of production with projections for 1.5 billion pounds. President of American Pistachio Growers, Richard Matoyan, said the industry has been very fortunate that global demand for pistachios has been largely keeping pace with increasing production over the past few years.
We had another record shipment year, which follows the record shipment year that we had last year. So very, very positive news of shipments. Our export shipments for the last completed crop year was up about 13.7%. So very, very positive, strong demand. And because of the fact that 70% of what we grow is exported, it's great to see those export numbers where they are. Going in the right direction, very positive trend.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is conducting elections for the Farm Service Agency County Committees. Agricultural producers and private landowners nationwide should have received ballots for the elections, which will need to be returned to local FSA county offices or be postmarked by December 4th. FSA Administrator Zach Ducheneau highlighted some of the duties of FSA County Committee members.
The FSA is unique in all of the federal government in that it does have producer-based county committees to help with the delivery and implementation of the policy decisions that are made within the 52 programs in the Farm Service Agency. Those county committees serve in every county. Counties are broken up into local administrative areas, so it's important that you understand which of those local administrative areas you're in. as a member of the county committee, your job is to represent your producers as stakeholders in the delivery of FSA programs. County committees are local ag producers who help ensure fair and equitable administration of FSA programs in their county or their multi-county jurisdiction. And they're under the general supervision of the appointed state committee, and they really serve as the eyes and ears of the producers who elected them. Another important role of the county committee is that they are the supervisor, in fact, of the county executive director. So they'll weigh heavily in the decisions that are made with regard to selection of new CEDs.
USDA is seeking input on its new Specialty Crop Competitiveness Initiative. Deputy Secretary Social Torres Small said several outreach efforts are underway.
Now we're turning to the industry for next steps. We want to be able to figure out where the gaps are so that we can help support specialty crops and products. All U.S. specialty crops producers, businesses, and stakeholders are encouraged to submit comments on how USDA can better support and meet the needs of industry. So if you would like to submit a comment, please visit the request for information posted in the Federal Register. Comments are due by March 8, 2024, which is 120 days from the date of publication. Also, USDA is going to be conducting extensive outreach through in-person and virtual events with industry stakeholders so we can truly learn from the experts and farmers themselves on how to best support this crucial industry.
Part of the $1.1 billion investment in the Regional Conservation Partnership Program from the Natural Resources Conservation Service includes funding support for a project looking to address the climate impacts of livestock. USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Robert Bonney was recently at a California dairy highlighting a project that could ultimately provide value to the entire dairy industry if it proves successful.
One of the challenges on the livestock side has been enteric methane. And so the work here is to get at that, to look at the role of feed additives in reducing methane emissions. So there are real opportunities to reduce methane emissions. And importantly, if it doesn't pencil for the producer, it's not going to pencil for the environment. And so doing this in a way that maintains agricultural productivity, that maintains economic viability, even as we promote sustainability, is critical.
Registration for the 100th Annual Agricultural Outlook Forum is now open. The event titled Cultivating the Future will be held in person at the Crystal City Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia, February 15th and 16th. All forum sessions will also be live streamed on a virtual platform. The 2024 forum will feature a keynote address by Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, a presentation on the outlook for agricultural markets and trade by USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer, a plenary panel of distinguished guest speakers, and 30 breakout sessions covering a wide range of topics. More than 100 experts from government, industry, and academia will share insights on topics such as commodity and food price outlooks, U.S. and global ag trade developments, and climate change. More information about the annual Agricultural Outlook Forum is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
This is the Agnet News Hour, and we will return in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Last week, I was at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting annual convention where I got this interview.
Marcia Bunger, I am the RMA, Risk Management Agency Administrator for USDA.
All right, well, let's talk about what's going on right now, and there are some deadlines for programs that are coming up. Is that correct?
That is very correct. So PRF, the Pasture Rangeland Forage Policy, that deadline is December 1st. So I would say don't just walk, but run to your crop insurance agent so that you can have a discussion if that's something that you're interested in for your livestock operation. It is a weather index policy, so you're not in. So part of it is that you don't involve a crop adjuster. We use NOAA data to determine whether your area hasn't experienced a loss, and so there's no claims adjuster that comes out. We're notified through our companies, through NOAA, whether it triggers, and then a claim payment is paid out, and so. Again, December 1, so don't miss that deadline. In addition, we are going to be hosting a livestock roadshow this winter. We are hitting several locations throughout the country. Livestock products have basically exploded. I believe now the livestock revenue protection policy is in the top 10 of all of the policies that we sell, and that will be covered. In addition, we just rolled out a pilot for weaned calf. that is going to be available in North Dakota. No, I'm sorry, South Dakota, Nebraska, Colorado, Texas, and I might be missing one other state, but all of that information is available on the website. And that deadline is January for that weaned calf. So again, while you're talking about PRF to your agent, also have them take a look and talk about the weaned calf if you're in that pilot area.
So going back to the PRF, the idea of having it go through NOAA notifications, not having to have a claims adjuster come out, that sounds like a really streamlined process.
It is very streamlined, and I can speak to that one personally, at first as a former crop insurance agent, but also as a user of that particular policy. So the process is that your agent fills out an application with you. You identify the pastures, the hay ground that you want to insure. The agent will go through the different quotes because there is different levels that you can purchase. And then once that is locked in and you have locked in your intervals that you want covered, then you basically kind of go about your business. And as the year progresses, then if the data shows that a payment has triggered, then your agent will get a hold of you and say, hey, you know, we have a payment for you.
So the most difficult thing a producer has to do to be part of this is make sure that they beat that deadline of December 1st to sign up.
Bingo. Exactly. So again, don't just walk, but run.
Right. Anything else you think our listeners should know about, or have we covered?
I think we've covered, you know, a lot. You know, I know you cover just a huge area. So there are a number of announcements that we have recently made. Improvements, we've added enterprise unit to several crops that was never available before. We've also added shellfish as a covered product in some parts of the country. So if you are an aquaculture producer, again, I would say get a hold of a crop insurance agent. The thing that I think I continue to remind farmers, and my husband and I are farmers, is that crop insurance isn't just about weather events. It's also a tool to be able to market and enhance your operation.
You know, being a farmer yourself, does that give you a different perspective as you are taking care of all of these programs?
Oh, definitely, because you know, many times if you're not a farmer, I think it's hard to understand what the farmer's going through. He's busy. I mean, there's so few of us anymore across the country doing work to feed the world, basically. And so it's important that those of us in any industry, that we make sure that we are explaining, taking the time to explain it in a way that it's understandable.
Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for being here at Trade Talk today.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Galen Beer, National Strategy and Product Management Lead.
You know, let's talk about fertilizer dollars, because as we all know, fertilizer prices have been a hot topic for the last few years. There has been a little bit of relief, but where should fertilizer dollars be focused to balance yield and economics?
Yeah, not only have fertilizer prices been high, but some of the supply chain issues have caused farmers to shift from their normal practices. So some of the inputs weren't as available over the last couple of years. So what we're just reminding guys is get back to balance. In a company like ours, we carry everything from nitrogen to molybdenum. So we try to make sure that whatever that guy is needing in that program, that we have it to put in there. And, you know, zinc was one of those nutrients that got pretty short the last couple of years. And if you're producing corn or mini crops in the Southeast, zinc is critical to that. So we just want to make sure that guys don't, that they haven't established a habit of, I don't need that anymore. It's time to return to those good, balanced nutrition habits.
All right, so if they have had to go without zinc for a few years, what could be going on in the soil, and what do they do to correct that?
Yeah, so you can get, you know, you can start using what's been there in the past. You can only live up on that for so long. So it's time now, if you look at that soil test and you've pulled that level down, it's time to be a little bit more aggressive. And prices have adjusted, to your point earlier. And so hopefully now you can afford to be a little bit more aggressive and just get those soils back up. We don't want to face those supply chain issues again, but if we do, you kind of want to have that soil test level up there so that you can endure if you have to go without for a year.
How can a grower find out what exactly is going on in their soil right now?
Soil testing is the best. And a complete soil test. I grew up on a farm. It seemed like we just sent off a soil test. Give me NPK. We've evolved beyond that. Now our yield goals are much higher than they used to be. We need to get all those micronutrients tested for on there. And, you know, we don't test for things like molybdenum. You get into the southeast, some of those soils and those lower pHs might benefit from that. We're not testing for it. But, you know, those outlier nutrients like molybdenum might be something a farmer wants to try on a few acres just to see if it's going to be worth that investment.
Anything else that would be key for southeast growers to know right now?
Well, I think in the southeast especially, you've got a lot of different cropping options. And I know cotton is pretty big down there, but cotton prices are certainly not as good as they have been the last few years. And so if farmers are going to look at any additional crops outside what is normal, again, that soil test is valuable. And then just asking questions of someone that can help them through that production of a different crop, say corn or peanuts or something that it might not traditionally grow.
Thank you so much for your time today.
You bet. Thanks for having me on, Sabrina.
Once again, that was coming from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Annual Convention. This is the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and today's interview segment is coming to us from the NAFB convention held last week in Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi, I'm Zach Duchesneau, administrator at the Farm Service Agency.
So as I just told you, I cover kind of a broad area. What are some key things that you think our listeners should know right now about what's going on at the FSA?
I think the key things that the listeners should know is that this administration has demonstrated its commitment to fill the gaps and make sure producers have access to these programs that maybe normally wouldn't have or didn't have the resources to gain the awareness of the programs. So we're really working to fill those gaps under a mandate from the Secretary. And we've made enhancements to a lot of our standing programs to get our arms around more producers. We've got a lot of opportunity in our supplemental disaster assistance programs. We've got a lot of opportunity in safety net programs, enhancing existing risk management strategies, and also in our suite of conservation programs that help producers really think about conservation and production in the same production practices.
Is there a key program that, or do you have like a favorite, you know, let me ask you to choose from your children. Which is your favorite program at the moment?
I am, the most impactful program that we have in my estimation is our ag finance programs and the farm loan programs. They give a producer an opportunity to get terms and rates that meet their actual needs that ultimately, when delivered with the flexibility that we can offer, can help that producer become a depositor in a bank instead of a perpetual debtor to a bank. And I think that's going to be the key to really fundamentally reconsidering how we do ag finance. Until and unless producers can start to make at least some of their production decisions for the next year from leftover production income instead of from what they can borrow from somebody for the next year, we're not going to see the change that we need to, and we're going to continue to see the stress on farmers and ranchers that causes the graying of the ag production system. We also have a critical partnership there with our lenders across the country, the farm credit system, the banks, the credit unions, a growing number of community development financial institutions in our guaranteed loan program, where we can come in and provide a 95% guarantee in some cases to produce to the lender to serve these producers. And it's important to remind everybody that our lenders can extend those same flexible terms to producers. By stretching out the term of these relationships, you allow producers to keep assets in production condition, amass a working capital reserve, lower the annual debt load, and really help them find some comfort in ag production. It's critical work that we do there, and really going to push on that for the next year.
A lot of ag programs are focused on a short-term goal, like this crop year, next crop year, but FSA programs, you're really looking at a very long-term goal of keeping things, you know, sustainability has become such a key word, but it's financial sustainability and farm sustainability with keeping family businesses going. What is the first step that a producer can take to get into that cycle of creating the sustainability?
So the first step, especially with our farm loan programs, first step is know your financial situation. Get your balance sheet filled out, have it filled out accurately, have a cash flow projection, understand what the cost of capital is in the private sector, and see if that's meeting your needs. If it's not meeting your actual needs, if you're not able to pay yourself a wage because the terms of those are too short, think about the Farm Service Agency as an option. There are some eligibility requirements that producers have to meet, and there are some limitations on the program. We have a $600,000 limit in real estate. We have a $400,000 limit in our farm operating loans. That's machinery, equipment, livestock, and annual operating expenses. In addition, you can use, under current statute, you can use our farm operating program for no more than 7 or 9 years. Once you start using our farm operating loan program, you have 10 years to do all of your borrowing from us before you have to go out to commercial credit. Those are a couple of things that we've done some analysis on, and this administration has included legislative proposals in the president's 23 budget to change those, eliminate those limits. Because the idea with the limits is it's supposed to support graduation to commercial credit. But if we're not best deploying our tools so that producers can build capacity and become depositors in commercial lending institutions, it's more like expulsion. So we think a proper graduation is maybe having producers use our programs to develop resources, develop working capital reserves, grow their asset base so that then they're more bankable in that regard because they're depositing in the bank, then they're a stakeholder in the conversation.
Those were all the questions that I had. Do you have anything else that you think our listeners should know?
Well, we've got county committee elections open right now, and go out there and take a look at the ballots. If you think you should have a ballot and you haven't gotten one, call your local office. We'll see if we can get you one in time. Consider serving in that county committee role. That opportunity comes up in your local administrative area once every 3 years, typically, and you can represent producers in the policy delivery of our important programs. And it's really unique in the federal sector to be able to have that opportunity. If you haven't been party to the National Ag Statistics Service census work, take a look at what that amounts to and get an understanding of what information that holds, because we're using information from NAS to drive policy changes. And if you're not getting counted by your census, the policies might not serve you. And our goal in this administration is to fill the gaps and get out there to where we're serving everybody.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Sabina.
And thank you for being here today. Appreciate it.
Good to see you.
You too.
Yep.
This is the AgNet News Hour, and we will return in just a moment. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. Continuing with our agriculture news for today, here's Rusty Halverson.
USDA has reported that farm incomes are lower than they expected earlier this year. Danny Munch, an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation, talks about what the new farm income forecast says about the farm economy.
2023 is forecast to be down a bit, but still at a really high level. As we're going into this situation that we're watching right now, where we're starting to see commodity prices fall substantially, we're coming off of three pretty good years, and I think that's important to remember.
Munch says nearly all sectors of the farm economy are projected to decrease.
It was a big number, $40 billion, almost a 25% decline. That sounds like a shocking, scary number, especially when you put it in context of high production expenses, high fertilizer, high interest rates. But as we talked about earlier, it's still historically a really strong year. And it's really the artifact of coming off of a record high number. When you start to revert to the mean after a record high, you're going to have some big adjustments.
He also said interest expenses, or the cost of capital, are almost 40% above last year. Munch says farmers and ranchers should plan now for how to weather those lower revenues.
Value of animal production. A lot of this is coming out of the hog sector. Poultry is not doing very well also. And so a lot of the farm economy hits came out of the animal side. Higher production expense accounted for about $16 billion. Lower direct payments, almost $5 billion. Interest expense, that one kicked in at almost $9 billion of an extra upturn here.
As always, weather and climate conditions will have strong impacts on the true outcome of this year's price outlook. Heat, flooding, and wind battering different regions of the country during the growing season, bringing uncertainty to final harvest volumes and quality, and global political factors could continue to cast a shadow on the commodity markets. I'm Rusty Halverson.
We're coming to you almost live from the Agriculture Department's Farmers Market in Washington, D.C., and in my never-ending quest to achieve a higher level of ignorance, I'm in the Veggie-cation tent, good old Veggie. Today, we are attending a second lesson focusing in on tomatoes. And yes, we have asked the Veggie Music Department to compose a complex and emotional piece of music dedicated to tomatoes or tomatoes. Go ahead, guys.
Tomatoes, tomatoes, tomatoes.
A deeply moving tribute, yeah.
Tomatoes, tomatoes.
Not exactly what we had hoped for there, but the best is yet to come. With me here is vegetator and tomato expert Nikita Vivekanandan. And of course, tomatoes are very common food, so why are you putting them on your Veggie curriculum?
I think there are just so many ways that you can use tomatoes that people don't know about. There's so much more than just a sandwich topping, you know?
Oh, yes. Nikita, back in the days of vaudeville, I don't know if you knew this, in traveling live theaters, if audiences didn't like the performance, they would throw rotten tomatoes at the actors. But that's not, no, that's not the use of tomatoes you had in mind, I'm sure. So tell us about what you're making here for the folks.
So today we're going to be featuring a tomato chutney, which I think is a more unique use of the tomato.
What is a chutney?
So a chutney is a dish that is common to India, which is where my family is from. So I grew up eating a lot of chutney, and it's just a combination of different blended fruits or vegetables.
So can you tell us about how you go about making this chutney?
Yeah, so we're going to start off by sautéing some cumin seeds for flavor, just how you would sauté, you know, onions to start off a dish. The cumin just gives it a different flavor. And then we're going to throw in some ginger and garlic. And then we're going to cook down some sliced tomatoes with chili powder and turmeric. We're going to let the tomato juice kind of evaporate, extract all the flavors, and then put it into the blender.
Oh, yeah, and get free samples to everybody here, too. Now, Nikita, you are a nutritionist, so I've got to ask this. What is the nutrient content of tomatoes?
They're a really great source of vitamin A, vitamin C, and potassium. So vitamins A and C are really important for immune system function. And your potassium is an electrolyte that is important for blood balance, so it's going to kind of keep you energetic throughout the day.
And it says here on this chart, lycopene.
And that is what gives tomatoes its red color. And lycopene has been shown to help prevent cancer in the body.
Okay, now, Nikita, they say you also fancy yourself as a comedian. Now, we've just got time for one tomato joke, so go ahead.
All right. What do you say to a tomato that's running late? You better catch up.
What do you say to a radio person who's leaving quickly? Very quickly. Oh, no, the music. But first, a reward for you for your performance, Nikita. Now that's funny. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This has been the AgNet News Hour with today's top agriculture news. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Thank you for sharing your morning with us.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halverson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.